This is an ABC podcast.
Oh, hi there. Some exciting news. At least we hope you're going to be excited. We are now releasing episodes on Fridays too. It's going to sound a little different. We're going to use it as a way to review things that have happened in the last week while previewing the weekend action as well. It's still going to be under 15 minutes. And today you're going to hear about one story in depth. Ben Cameron's going to join us to talk AFL. Emma Lawrence is zeroing in on the big yarns in the NRL. And we'll have something fun to round it out. Here's our first Friday fix. I'm Patrick Stack. This is ABC Sport Daily. There was an enormous story in cricket this week. The Aussie ladies dominating the Women's Premier League. Tim Payne retiring for good. The men's ODI team going to number one in the rankings after dusting India in India. No, those were all big, but no, none of those. For me, it was the launch of Major League Cricket, the latest short-form white ball comp to enter the mix alongside leagues like the BBL, the T20 Blast and the OG IPL. T20 leagues have taken on a bit of NFT or crypto vibe. Everyone's trying to get in on the action, and it's hard to know who or what to take seriously. But when Aussie T20 World Cup winners Aaron Finch, Mitch Marsh and Marcus Stoinis were announced as joining the San Fran Unicorns, I needed to know more.
Stoinis running in, 11 to win. Change up, delivery, hit to Maxwell again at long off. He takes the catch, Kartik out. Stoinis on a hat-trick.
While this cricket team does indeed have a mythical animal on its logo, the unicorn term is a double entendre about that city's propensity for tech unicorns. And we love the imagery it conjures. Finchy and Big Puppy Stoin cruising around Silicon Valley in puffer vests, rubbing shoulders with Zuck and Muskie, cricket's tech bros riding this whole US T20 cricket league stuff to the moon. Beyond the absurdity, it's actually quite fascinating. Here's what we know. The comp is part of a push to grow cricket in the United States as they head towards their own T20 World Cup in 2024. It'll run for 3 weeks in July. It features six teams that are based around big markets with South Asian populations. They're the Unicorns, the Seattle Orcas, Mumbai Indian New York, Texas Super Kings, LA Knight Riders, and the Washington Freedom. If you notice that a number of these are related to IPL franchises, you get a gold star. Why are the big Australian names playing? Well, it's relatively lucrative. Each team has a salary cap of $800,000 US. The highest paid player in each team can command $175,000. Not bad cash for five games. How does that compare to, say, the BBL? Well, the most a player could be paid in the BBL auction last season was $340,000 Australian for 9 to 10 games. So the US version is actually more per game, at least at the top end. Australia's involvement goes well beyond a few players. It turns out that Cricket Vic and Cricket New South Wales have entered into partnerships with the Unicorns and the Washington Freedom, respectively. Sharing of IP around building a cricket roster, staging games, engaging fans, etc. That's what it's about for them. Why do this? They say they want to grow the game, but there are upsides beyond the warm vibes of altruism. For one, their players and staff get to branch out and learn a few things. Knowledge is power. But interestingly, when we ask people in the know whether either party could take an ownership share down the line, the response was generally a version of, that's not what they're doing right now, but yes, that's in play. They could get a share. Perhaps more importantly, look at who these sporting bodies are putting themselves in the mix with. Satya Nadella is a part owner of the Seattle Orcas. He's also the CEO of Microsoft. The Unicorns are owned by two blokes who own a venture capital firm with hundreds of millions of dollars under management. When you consider the growing noise around private equity ownership of BBL franchises, it's pretty savvy to start shaking hands with people with huge financial acumen and deep pockets who seemingly love cricket and are interested in investing in it. And hey, worst case, Big Puppy Stoinis and co. get to play some cricket stateside. Time to zero in on three things from this round of AFL. Ben Cameron has it all in his scope. Ben, another Thursday night thriller in the AFL. I can't figure out if the biggest story from this outcome is that Geelong, the reigning premiers, are zip and two, or that Carlton finally won a close one. You tell me.
Geelong are the first reigning premiers to be zip and two since Hawthorn in 2009 after their surprise 2008 flag, and they missed the finals that year, so maybe that's a bad omen for Geelong. Look, a lot of people are saying, look, Carlton finally won a close one. How good is that? It's great that they've won a close game, but they made it closer than it should have been. They led by 28 points on three occasions in the third quarter. But how good was it to see last night the two key forwards at either end involved in a shootout? Cousin Jezza, Jeremy Cameron, 6 goals, 25 disposals. He looked every bit the best player on the ground.
Jeremy Cameron with 5 goals next to his name does just that. He's a one-man show.
But he was involved in a shootout with Charlie Curnow, who booted 5 for the victorious Blues.
Comes free, forward pocket, always collects, kicks to Curnow in the goal square. Charlie Curnow from point blank range has 5 in 2 and a bit quarters.
It was like a throwback to yesteryear. The 2 key forwards at either end involved in a shootout. Great to see.
It was fantastic stuff. It's going to be more fantastic stuff coming our way in Brisbane tonight. The city's on lockdown for the NRL's Battle of Brisbane, which feels like it kind of raises the stakes for the Lions, who were highly fancied coming into the season, only to be thumped in round one. They face a resurgent D's without Kasiah Pickett. What's at stake here, Ben?
Well, it feels like a bit of a misstep by the AFL, doesn't it, to schedule this match as a direct clash with the Battle of Brisbane. So the Dolphins and the Broncos in the NRL meeting for the very first time, and the Brisbane Lions in a high-stakes matchup against Melbourne at the very same time. I think that's a mistake. Brisbane can ill afford to go zip two. And my issue with Brisbane over the last couple of years, Stacky, has been that they don't defend. They're like turnstiles on defence. Teams just walk straight through them, and I think we saw that after halftime in the opening round match against Port Adelaide.
Drew was there to crumb, gave it off to Holland Francis. The fend-off on Lockie Neal, of all people, heads long towards the goal square and hits Georgiades.
And then we get to see them up against Melbourne, who admittedly they beat in the finals last year, but Melbourne generally have beaten them up around the ball. They've dominated them in contested possession. And we've heard Brisbane this week say that, look, there's almost a... They didn't go as far as to say smugness, but there's an attitude amongst the Melbourne players that, look, we're better than you. And the Melbourne players believe that. So what can Brisbane do tonight against Melbourne? I'm really intrigued.
One of the biggest feuds in the AFL is Collingwood v Port and their incessant bickering over the prison bar jumper and who can wear it when.
That jumper of Collingwood's keeps them going because we make a lot of money off the back of that. It is a trademark issue. The AFL, when they took over all our trademarks, they must protect the trademark. Worry about making money and stop annoying us every year. Simple as that. Back off. No.
And they clash Saturday at the G. It's kind of overshadowed the fact that these two teams had belting round one wins. What is this game going to tell us?
Can you own colours, Stacky? That's the interesting debate heading into to Collingwood and Port Adelaide. I think this is the most interesting game of round two. So arguably the two most impressive sides out of round one. They go head-to-head, and I can't wait to see it. Collingwood live in attack mode. Port Adelaide have just about the most exciting young midfield in the competition. So in the second half on the weekend, it wasn't the old stages. It wasn't the tried and tested former captain Travis Boak. It was the young stars like Jason Horne-Francis.
Right down to Horne-Francis, down the throat from 50. Gets booked to ball towards the top of the goal square. Marshall Shepherds, and it's through for a major. Jason Horne-Francis has his first in teal.
Connor Rosie, Zach Butters, who went into the midfield with Xavier Dersmer on a wing and just started to dominate that game against the Brisbane Lions. I think that's the most exciting young midfield in the competition, and I can't wait to see how it all plays out.
Ben Cameron, you're young and exciting. Thanks for your time.
Getting old quickly though, Stacky. Good to speak to you.
Emma Lawrence from Channel 9 is here to talk us through the three biggest storylines in this round of NRL. Emma, we've got to start with the grand final rematch, Para v Penrith, a one-point thriller. What's the storyline that's got you most interested? Is it the whole grand final revenge thing? You know, Para are our sun sledge backfiring. Is it Mitch Moses justifying an enormous contract? Tell me, Emma, what's the pick for you?
The best thing about this, Stacky, was that there are storylines galore, and sitting on the sideline last night, I could not believe what unfolded, but the overwhelming storyline is the Mitchell Moses contract saga. It's been dragging on for months and months. The Tigers were chasing him hard, actually offered him a lot more money, but he wanted to stay at Parramatta. It's not officially signed, but he's made his decision that he wants to stay. You couldn't have scripted it any better. With the game on the line in Golden Point.
Just follow me, boys, for one more. Last tackle. Moses is 22 metres out. Hands goes to Mitchell. And Mitchell, on the day he signs a 5-year contract, he kicks the goal and wins it. Parramatta's won it. They have.
The grand final rematch and that bitter exchange between the two sides has almost become a bit of a side story, but you just couldn't have scripted it any better. And rugby league always somehow delivers, doesn't it?
It certainly does. If you want to talk about bitter rivalries, we've got the first chapter of one coming at us tonight, the inaugural Battle of Brisbane. It's been billed as Wayne Bennett versus the Broncos as much as it has been the Dolphins v Brisbane. But it feels as though the spice in this one extends way beyond Wayne. Why has this game got NRL fans beyond excited?
For so long, the Broncos dominated Brisbane. You know, that's their town. And all of a sudden, there's another team in the town. And the thing is, the Dolphins already have a really large supporter base. Their, you know, first match up there at Suncorp Stadium against the Roosters was almost sold out.
Holds it, gives it to the leper O'Sullivan. Cut out to Aiken. Aiken is tackled. Clock counting down. Dolphins are in the big time in a big way. On opening day, they've beaten the Roosters. History at the Cauldron.
I think there are a lot of fans up in Brisbane that actually hate the Broncos. So all of those have just naturally jumped on to the Dolphins. So I haven't seen a build-up to a match like this in a long time. Even with the Souths and Roosters games, I think because we have that every year, we're used to it. But this has just been something else. And then, of course, you've got Wayne Bennett, who was at the Broncos for so long. They got rid of him. He was a good mate of Kevy back in the day, and all the stories have come out of when he had to sack Kevin Walters from the Broncos, and now they're facing each other. So once again, with this one, there are subplots galore. Before you even begin to look at the actual team and the football.
To be here at week four and I have the whole state and probably the whole country engaged in this game tomorrow night, so just pleased to be a little part of it.
No Felice Kaufusi there because he's been rubbed out for 4 weeks. I would have said usually a grand final rematch would be the match of the round, but this one could possibly even top it this week, Stacky.
If you want to talk about emotional storylines, there's certainly one in Souths up against Manly this week. John Sattler passed away this week, a man famous for his bravery in the 1970 grand final victory over Manly Warringah. It feels serendipitous that Sattler's Bunnies will play Manly. How emotional is this going to be for the Rabbitohs faithful?
Very emotional. He was just such an important part of that club, and all of the stories we've heard over the last few days, courage and bravery, and that 1970 grand final playing with a broken jaw. But what's also been beautiful are the stories about Sattler as a person. And everyone said, despite the fact that he was a warrior on the field, he was such a gentleman. And when he walked into the room, he just lit up the room and so kind and sweet to everyone, and I guess sort of drew everyone towards him. So, yeah, very fitting that this match will be on, and the South community and the club and the staff and players will be doing a lot to honour John Sattler. So, yeah, as tough as this week will be for his family, and hopefully a really nice way to honour such a champion both on and off the field.
Emma Lawrence, it's going to be a belting round of NRL. Thanks so much for your time.
No worries. Enjoy the footy. Doesn't get any better.
A reminder, you can catch every moment live of the AFL and NRL this weekend via the Listen app. The link is in the show notes. We are rounding out the week with some of the quotes and one-liners that made our ears prick up. Here's your weekly soundbite. Got to start with the NRL feud. Did you catch the Sharks' Royce Hunt and Canberra's Corey Horsburgh this week? The two got into a scuffle on field. Only Royce Hunt got punished. Here's what he said.
You know, you can't just hold me in and push me over and not expect anything. It's a bit upset about that. You know, as Ricky Shewitt would say, he's a weak gutter dog, but
Horsburgh retaliated by getting on Photoshop, making an image of himself holding a baby-sized Royce Hunt, posting that on Instagram, basically the whole who's your daddy areas. Premium level trolling. If that was a fallout in F1, it was a love in. Fernando Alonso getting around his team.
Well done, guys. Fantastic. I still need to buy some beers in Australia. Well done, guys. Well deserved.
A podium age 41, it is worth celebrating. And World Athletics has banned trans women from competing in elite female competitions if they've gone through male puberty. Here's President Sebastian Coe.
We will be establishing a working group whose remit will be to consult specifically with transgender athletes to seek views on competing in athletics, to review and maybe commission additional research.
This is ABC Sport Daily, produced by Poppy Penny. I'm Patrick Stack. Thanks to Channel 9, Formula 1 and World Athletics for the extra audio used in this episode.
Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.